The 2024 general election will make history, and not just at the national level. There will be a first here in the city of Chicago, as voters cast ballots for members of the first elected school board in the city's history. With everything going on in the Chicago public schools, we're going to take a closer look at those elections. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. The transition to an elected school board in Chicago could not come at a more appropriate time. Everything is changing at CPS. Mayor Johnson has tried to pressure the schools into taking on short-term, high-interest debt to pay for a new teacher's contract and for pensions. School CEO Pedro Martinez resisted. The school board backed him up then, but now they have resigned. A new board is in place, and Martinez is under pressure again. Well, that brings us to the school board elections, which brings us to Becky Vivi. Becky is the bureau chief for Chalk Beach Chicago. That's a highly respected nonprofit news organization covering education. But if Becky's name or voice is familiar to you, she spent a decade with our friendly radio competitors at WBEZ. And more to the point, as far as I'm concerned, she covered government and politics as well as education and was part of the City Hall press room where I am right now. She is an authority on these elections for the Chicago Board of Ed. And Becky, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Craig. I love being here. It's so good to talk with you.
Likewise, likewise. Well, all right, the national elections have grabbed most of the news headlines in the past months. But, I mean, let's talk a little bit about that we are making history in these school elections that are about to come in less than 2 weeks.
Right, and it's really a long time coming for the city. This has been something activists have been advocating for over a decade. And in 2021, a bill was signed into law to pave the way for these elected seats to be on our school board. And this year, we will elect 10 new school board members from various neighborhoods around the city. And then in 2 years, we'll elect 20.
Yeah, which is kind of a slow roll to it. But Chicago's, as if I believe, Chicago is the only school district in the state without an elected school board, right?
That is correct. There have been a couple other districts that have been under state oversight and had their boards replaced. But Chicago is really the only one that's had a mayorally appointed school board for as long as it has.
But now, given that you get to see all of this up close, I mean, the school board, and we are talking during the week, but the school board met in the interim. And so who's in charge?
That's a great question. Well, this week, a new set of 7 appointees, people appointed by Mayor Brandon Johnson, swore themselves in and are, you know, in charge now. We're told that some of them may stay on or have intent to stay on beyond January 15th, when the elected school board members will also be sworn in. And without hopefully confusing people, the mayor does get to appoint 11 members with the 10 that are elected come January. So he may decide to keep some of these 7 people he just appointed as among the 11 that he would then appoint in January. The tricky thing is, he will have to make those appointments based in part on who wins the 10 seats. And there's a chance that, you know, some of the people who were just appointed today, or this week, I should say, they may live in the same side of a district as a winner, and therefore they wouldn't also be able to serve in January.
Yeah, and let's make sure people understand that, because it's a complicated playing field. Each district, and there are 10, as you point out, is basically split in half.
And, yes.
Right?
So there are, when the district, I'm sorry, when state lawmakers made this map, it was fascinating to me because, you know, I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to electoral districting, and I've covered it, you know, from the political side. So they were making brand new maps, essentially, and they divided the city into these 10 districts, and then each of those 10 is divided in half. So we will get to those 20 in 2 years by dividing these 10 in half, you know, come in 2 years from now. But something that, again, is sort of tricky is anybody can run right now in one of the 10 districts. But if the winner lives on, say, the side of 10A, the mayor must appoint somebody on the 10B side. So there's, again, two sides, an A and a B side to all of these 10 districts. And right now, it's kind of a toss-up based on the candidates. Some candidates live in different sides of the district. And then, like I said, when the winners are announced or when we figure out who, gets the most votes, then the mayor would be able to appoint people on the other side. And then they'll all be up for election in 2026.
I would think that that's kind of dizzying for some of the voters. I mean, I'm sure you've been talking to some regular folks out there.
Yes.
Are their heads spinning?
I think that a lot of people still just didn't know we were having school board elections. So most voters, and I intentionally don't jump in with the whole complicated appointment process, although we started there in part because, the mayor is making new appointments right now. But I have started for the last, I guess 6 months, whenever anybody talks to us or when we write our stories, I've been trying just to ground the people and people in the public in the fact that we have 10 districts. Just figure out which of the 10 you live in, look up your candidates, and find out which candidate more closely aligns with your views. And so we've done a lot of stories, and just we did a voter guide to try to help people understand the 10 districts and just think about it like, okay, here are these 10 districts in the same way that we think about 50 wards in the city. And not to confuse people too much about the 20 that are coming down the pipe or the half splits and all of that. So again, I think the voter education piece is really just, do you know that these board elections are happening? And if you don't, we have resources to help you get up to speed.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some of that toward the end. So if people want to run and get pens or pencils now, go ahead and do that. But keep listening. One other thing that we can't escape is that Mayor Johnson will numerically still be in control even when a new 20-member board takes place or takes its seats in January, right?
And it's going to be 21 members.
Right.
There will be,
See, I think I in my head, and I probably shouldn't think of it that way. I think of it as 20 members and a president, but the
and a
president
president.
exactly is a member of the board and elected from within the board, right?
Correct, though the mayor will get to appoint that person and they can live anywhere in the city. So he'll appoint 11 people and the voters will elect 10. So we'll have those 10. And so 10 of his 11 appointees have to be coming from those like specific geographies, but one of them can come from anywhere and they would be the, presumably the board president.
Now, when we get down to the elections part of this, are you finding that different districts have different dynamics?
Yeah.
That, even if they're trying to divide the city kind of semi-equally, what are they getting? What are the districts like?
Well, so anyone who's covered electoral mapping knows that you have to draw these district maps based on voters and populations. But we know that the school system doesn't perfectly map over those evenly drawn districts. So every district has about 275,000 voters or Chicagoans living in it. But when when the maps were finalized, we at Chalkbeat took a lot of the data that we have and sort of overlaid it and linked it up, and we found, some districts have more than 100 schools. District 5 has 105 schools. District 4 has 34 schools. So just think about that. Like the number of schools that that person is representing in that geography is vastly different from, part different across the different districts. They're also serving different student demographic populations. These maps were not based on student enrollment. We know that there are many areas of the city where the people who, the number of kids who go to CPS is a smaller percentage or share of the overall like student population or just overall population. There may be less children in certain neighborhoods. And so we do see, I think, like the issues are slightly, they're gonna emerge as slightly different. And you'll see board members talking about their various constituencies probably differently because of those dynamics. Like I said, if you're a board member elected to represent 100 plus schools, you're going to have to balance interests of 100 different, you know, school communities. That's different than a board member representing 35 schools. And I think just the demands of those jobs are going to be slightly different as well.
Are you hearing candidates, or for that matter, activists, talking about how you can keep an equitable balance on the school board if people are representing wildly different constituency, wildly different populations?
You know, it's interesting, and I've heard some candidates talk about this in a way where they are aware that a school board member's responsibility is to the district as a whole. And I've heard actually candidates say, like, I'm responsible for all the children in Chicago Public Schools, not just the ones in my district. But I think there's probably practical matters. For example, when I think about like school facilities, you know, as a school board member, you may argue and fight to get facility repairs in your district over another district. But as a board member, you also have to make sure that the district is taking an equitable approach to how it repairs school facilities. And so I've heard some candidates, you know, commit to both, like, I'm going to serve my constituents and I'm going to serve the district as a whole because my responsibility is to promote equity across the whole system. And then, you know, others, you know, maybe not haven't like publicly talked about that or put out sort of statements like that. I will tell you, as somebody, again, who formerly spent a lot of days in that press room with you, like, one thing I've wondered about is, will we get some kind of version of aldermanic prerogative where you have school board members saying, well, like, this is what I believe should happen in my district, and I want the rest of you all to sort of defer to me. I don't know that that will happen. But that is what I think is really fascinating and historic about not only the elections, but the fact that we're creating a new form of government right here in our city. And I think that makes the role of journalists and just the role of the public all that more important to make sure that this new governing body acts in the best in the best interest of kids.
Well, and let's one part of our job is to make sure that people can make informed decisions. How do people figure out, first off, how do they figure out what district they're in? Because even some of those maps, you've got to get pretty granular and then get a pretty big blow up of a map to know whether you're on a certain street. But also, how do you make an informed decision about the people running? And in a couple of cases, there's almost, you know, there's like, maybe it's not only just one person. Oh, I think there is one district that has only one person, right? But how do you make that decision?
That's a great question. We at Chalkbeat have created a number of resources, and one of them is an interactive district map that folks can find on our website, chalkbeat.org/Chicago. We'll get you right to the kind of the Chicago page, and there's a link to our school board resources. We also teamed up with WBEZ, my former employer, and the Sun-Times, creating a voter guide where we asked the candidates 16 different questions, half of which were yes-no questions, and includes biographical information and information about their endorsements, who they're endorsed by. You can find that at wbez.org/voter guide, or there's also a link on our website at chalkbeat.org. And in that voter guide, you can also just plug in your address and it'll tell you which district you're in and take you straight to those candidates. And then you can read up on the candidates. Chalkbeat also, earlier this month, we held forums, candidate forums, where we, you know, had kind of hour-long conversations and asked candidates a series of questions, including, you know, what they want to see in a district CEO, since that's such a hot button issue right now with Pedro Martinez and keeping him at the helm or not keeping him at the helm, and whether or not he sticks around now. That is one of the core functions of our school board, is to hire the leader and evaluate them and fire them if they don't feel they're doing a good job. School boards all over the country hire their superintendents. That's one of their key roles besides passing a budget. And so we talked to them about that. So I would encourage people to check out our website and check out those voter guides. We teamed up with Block Club to do a story on each district as well. So you can also find that story and look at your district once you find out which district you're in and read up a little more on the background of those candidates.
You are listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore. My guest is Becky Veevey. She is the Bureau Chief of Chalk Beach, Chicago, and we're talking about the school board elections and more. And knowing how to make those decisions and where to look is vital for this. I want to talk to you a little bit about who's behind the candidates because they are saying who their supporters are, but under normal circumstances, people don't much care who's paying, for a campaign. But that makes a really big difference in this race, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's been really interesting to see how the money has flowed in to the coffers of these candidates. So I would say we've done a number of stories. Others have done stories about the amount of money that the Chicago Teachers Union has spent, particularly helping their endorsed candidates with things like field staff, boots on the ground, mailers and materials as well. But you saw them really spending quite a bit over the summer and into now the fall on helping their endorsed candidates. We are also starting like in late August, early September, we did start to see the Illinois Network of Charter Schools and its related political action committees start spending a lot of money. They have a normal, like traditional political action committee, but they also have a super PAC, which for folks who don't know, super PACs are essentially they can really raise unlimited amounts and they can spend in different races. They're not allowed to coordinate directly with campaigns. So we've seen the Illinois Network of Charter Schools super PAC spend a lot of money on be like in support of certain candidates that they believe are supportive of charter schools and school choice, which is essentially, the ability for parents to pick a school that they think fits best for their kids. Charter schools, I should also note, are privately run. They're publicly funded, but privately run. The teachers union has organized teachers at some of those charter schools, but not all charter schools have unionized teachers. And they've kind of frequently butted heads, like philosophically, on the direction of education, those two groups. We also saw another super PAC kind of enter the fray with some familiar names attached to it. Juan Rangel, who was a former charter leader, he and Paul Vallis were, Paul Vallis was a former mayoral candidate and also once ran the Chicago Public Schools. They've created a PAC called a PAC and a super PAC called Urban Center. And they've started spending money in these races again for on behalf of pro-choice candidates. And again, when you mention like why, who, why, how much should we care about who funds these races? These are two groups that have interests in school policy. So the teachers union on one hand obviously has a lot of interests in school budgets, school policies. They represent teachers who work in the system. And the charter school networks, obviously, they also represent operators of schools who, want to continue to operate within the system. And so,
And what about the choice, the people who are, with the new pack that's in?
yeah, the new PAC. It's interesting. So Juan Rangel, after he left UNO under SEC scrutiny, he was dinged for some federal violations that I won't go through all of them here, but he went to and he ended up going on to work for one of the tax credit scholarship granting organizations. And this is the kind of voucher-like program that Illinois, the state of Illinois, ran for the last 6 years. That program has now sunset. And the organizations that gave out those scholarships like are not they're not like their next steps are kind of unclear, but The Urban Center PAC, has said that they want to go after candidates who are like middle of the road and believe in center views, but promote school choice. And some of their candidates have some ties to that private school tax credit scholarship program, which the union has long argued that, like, and they were in favor of sunsetting it, that that program siphoned money away from the public schools, whereas proponents of that program said no, it was just another form of choice, and it just gave people tax credits when they supported scholarships. So again, sort of a diverging views about how public money gets spent on education, and it'll be interesting to see if urban centers support or money influence, like if any of their candidates win any seats.
And are we seeing enough visibility among these different candidates? I mean, are people really seeing the money that's being put into this race, or is it flying, over many of their heads?
You mean the candidates themselves or the voters?
Over the heads of the voters. In other words,
Oh, well, I don't know.
are they seeing enough of the advertising to really know which candidates they want?
That's a good question. I will say I've gotten a lot of text messages, and I think a lot of this money is going towards that sort of text blitzing. I'm sure people are sick of it. Every election cycle, we get a bunch of random texts from people saying, will you vote for my person or will you support us? And I've been getting a lot of texts for the candidates in the district that I live in. I've seen some ads like on TV, but they're very brief. And to the extent, I mean, you know this, Craig, like to the extent they'll sway voters either way, I don't know. I think the one thing they are doing, like what many people do, again, when I said they're letting people know that frankly there is a school board election. Many people still just don't know that because we haven't ever had it on our ballot. Now I think I've seen some ads that have been trying to capitalize, I think, on some of the news lately, and maybe capitalize on people who are not happy with Mayor Brandon Johnson and saying, this school board candidate will stand up to him, and so you should vote for them. And then you have, on the other hand, you have folks who, are saying, Brandon Johnson and the teachers union endorsed candidates like will, better fund the schools. That's what they're fighting for, is more funding and more resources in the schools. So,
Let's talk about what happens the day after. Not exactly the day after, but for example, how are things going to go, and what can happen to Pedro Martinez? He's at the center of this tornado. What's his, what are his chances for staying around? And I mean, he's got some protections in his own contract, I believe.
well, I was going to say, I do think that, his contract has a lot of protections. And I think in some of the very behind the scenes reasoning that the previous school board resigned is that it's not as simple as just taking a vote to remove somebody from their role. And I think the future of the district school's chief is, I do not have a magic eight ball. It's one I'm like really trying to not like give any sort of prediction on because I feel like every hour it changes. But I will say, like, procedurally, the board is the only entity that can take a vote to remove him, unless he were to, like, again, voluntarily resign, or submit a letter to the mayor resigning, which he made clear he wasn't going to do. I don't know if this current new seven-member board that was sworn in this week has intentions of taking some kind of action before January 15th when new members fully are seated. I will say, all the candidates, when we talked to the candidates at our forums, we specifically asked, would you keep Pedro Martinez in his role? And overwhelmingly, most of them said yes, in the name of stability and because they feel like he is doing a decent job keeping the district moving forward, getting progress academic progress. We have seen, new test scores just came out showing more continued progress coming back from the pandemic. Students are gaining in math and reading. And so I would say most of the elected new members will likely be supportive of him, but there are a few, CTU-backed candidates who were hesitant to say that they would keep him in place. And I mean, the mayor has, like I said, the mayor has kind of been clear that he's not as happy with his performance or his urgency, I should say, in getting transformation for the school system as he sees it.
Yeah, but the last thing I want to ask about is just so we're keeping up with you because you're doing stuff every day. You've reported that Chicago's considering giving preschool student or pre-kindergarten students priority in kindergarten admissions at the school where they are going. Why is that an issue?
That's a good question. I was wondering as I wrote that, I was like, I have to make this make sense for people. So it's partly because pre-K is a new thing. Universal pre-K was, promised by former Mayor Rahm Emanuel at the very end of his second term. It was carried through by Mayor Lori Lightfoot, and we are now at a place where we have universal 4K across the school system. But 4K admissions were always like done a little bit separately from the CPS system. So it was possible for you to get a spot in a 4K and then not be guaranteed a seat in that kindergarten because maybe you didn't live in the boundary of that school, or maybe that school's a magnet and they run a different admissions at the kindergarten level. So now, what they're proposing in this policy change is to say that pre-K students who are in the pre-K at a building, they will have some priority. They won't jump ahead of the kids in the boundary. They won't jump ahead of siblings, but they will, after siblings and staff and kids in the boundary, if it's a neighborhood school, those pre-K kids will get an offer before they open up the lottery to like everyone else who lives outside the boundary for kindergarten. So that is a good new, a lot of principals and people I talked to at the district said, we want to have seamless transitions because once you're in a school, you become part of that school's community. It makes sense for you to stay. And it's like a weird glitch that they right now don't get that priority. And again, the best way I can explain it is just we didn't always have pre-K. And so pre-K got, launched and exists in this other little world. And they're just trying to make a more seamless transition between the two.
And appropriate for talking about education, we're all learning, right?
Exactly.
I want to thank Becky Vivi. She's the bureau chief of Chalk Beach Chicago for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcast on Audacy.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.